Hello there. I'd just like to apologise for the fact that this episode was recorded on a slightly inferior microphone. I've painstakingly gone through it and tried to my best to edit out all the popping and stuff. But it might be a little bit close if it's some places, but hopefully that won't impair your enjoyment of the episode. So without further ado, here is the theme tune. Welcome to episode 18 of the Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life podcast. My name is indisputably Marcus Freestone. And hurrah, hurrah, and a thousand hurrahs, this week, on the 18th episode, finally, I am doing an entire episode based on questions from a listener. So hopefully that will encourage more of you to do this when you see how glorious this podcast is. No, I'll cut that out. Never mind. Anyway, so this comes from a lengthy Facebook message I had from somebody who I won't name because of the personal nature of some of the questions she asked and some of the things we're going to talk about. But what I'm going to do is sometime in the few days after this episode is released, I will hopefully be putting my new coding knowledge to use and including a handy little comment box on the website, so that instead of having to email me or send me a Facebook message, you can just type a question or a suggestion for the podcast in the little box, and then that will automatically send me an email. So I still encourage you to do that. I would like to do this every week, but as I keep saying, I've mined just about all I can from my own life. And so I want you to get involved. And I'd really like to do this every week and build it up. Please get in touch, send me some messages. So all I will say about the listener who sent in this question is that she is female. And she asked me a lot of stuff. And then we've had a message exchange back and forth because I wanted some further clarification. I'll tackle the first sentence of her question initially, and then we'll move on to the other stuff. What she wanted was more on what we can do when external situations are stressful and triggering us. And she then went on to mention Gurdjieff, which is something that I've talked about in the podcasts before, and obviously she's interested in. So this is what I've come up with. And it's timely because, as it happens, I've been dealing with this in my own life this very week. It's a cliche that writers and creative people are socially dysfunctional and a bit autistic, but I, unfortunately, seem to conform to that stereotype. I decided when I was 7 that all I wanted to do in life was to be a novelist. I'm now 45 and I've just published my 7th novel. So in one sense, you could say that I've succeeded in my life's goal. However, many of the reasons I made the decision were negative, and writing 7 novels and 12 other books has not ameliorated those negative feelings. Part of the reason I chose this path was because I loved books from the age of 4 and thought that writing them was the greatest thing a human being could aspire to. But another reason, which has haunted me ever since, is that I was trying to forge an identity for myself, to make the world pay attention to me and acknowledge that I exist and that I'm a real person. I did this because I grew up without a father or the traditional supportive family unit, and therefore felt inadequate, unwanted, and abandoned. And sadly, at the age of 45, I still do often feel like that. I was emotionally damaged as a child and withdrew into my own head, and chose a creative path because I thought that would allow me to successfully communicate with and participate in the world and feel a sense of belonging and validation that I lacked at home. This has, I'm sorry to say, been a spectacularly unsuccessful and self-defeating strategy, and has led me to the point where I find it very stressful to engage with the world outside my own front door and my own imagination. My sense of identity is so entrenched in the idea of being a novelist, an inherently solipsistic and antisocial activity, that I find it very hard to be a regular person in the external world. I often feel that I'm separate from everyone else, that I don't belong, that nobody understands me, and I don't understand them. Because I live in my head so much, I find the external world overwhelming and somewhat unreal. And I'm sure there'll be many listeners that will identify with that. You don't have to be a novelist or be a creative person to feel out of place in the world. I think most people do to some extent. I think it's a relatively small percentage of people who are lucky enough to grow up with loving, supportive parents and to not have any kind of emotional conflict or trauma in their life and feel that, yes, I'm a worthwhile person and everybody likes me and, you know, I get what I deserve in life. I think most people probably don't feel like that. Okay, so that's my own personal story. Let's broaden it out to a more general statement about humanity and this problem of dealing with the external world. One of the major elements of human consciousness we have evolved is a craving for patterns and predictability. We're constantly seeking an environment that is safe and comforting and trying to avoid those that are unpredictable and potentially dangerous. And we do this for perfectly sound evolutionary reasons. The reason we find the external world so stressful is that we simply haven't adapted to the momentous changes. As I keep banging on about on this podcast, we are cognitively no different to our ancestors from 40,000 years ago. We have gone in the blink of an eye from living in caves and hunting bison to a world of cars, aeroplanes, recorded sound, smartphones, TV and the internet. We have not adapted to all this one iota. In our brain and our bodies, we're still living in small tribes, and yet we have to deal with living in cities amongst millions of people. The reason we are stressed is quite simple: sensory overload. Our brains and bodies are only adapted to cope with one or two big events a day, not hundreds and thousands of them. We haven't evolved to deal with an awareness of 7 billion people, with 24-hour news, with a knowledge of an infinite universe, and our cognitive architecture simply cannot cope with this unprecedented amount of information. It's no wonder that sometimes just getting out of bed and facing the day ahead seems like an unbearable and mammoth task. It is. We have an inbuilt filter, our subconscious brain, that ignores information we don't need to pay attention to. But this system is now so overwhelmed that it's got to the point of total meltdown. Even a person in the 21st century living the simplest possible life is bombarded with too much shit to deal with. And the result of this is an intolerable stress on our cognitive and physiological systems. So, what can we practically do about all this? Well, I haven't owned a television for over 10 years. One of the reasons for this is that as I've got older, I find bright colours, loud noises, and the constantly cutting style of modern TV too fatiguing and overwhelming on a sensory level. I also don't go to the cinema for the same reasons. I increasingly find that I can only cope with reading and listening to radio, music, and podcasts. And I only go on the interwebs when I have something specific to do. I never spend hours just surfing around for the sake of it, just as I don't flick aimlessly through the hundreds of TV channels. So, one way to cope with the external world and all its pressures is to cut down on your exposure to it. It's utterly impossible to keep up with everything in the world, so why make yourself stressed and ill trying? The same can be said for toxic people. apart from the general saturation of sensory overload, be it TV, internet, traffic, numbers of people in crowded cities or whatever, the main stresses in the external world come from other people, principally from their negative attitudes towards you. This negativity, judgment, cruelty, intransigence, hostility, however you choose to categorize it, can be either real or imagined. This is a very important point that I've made before. I mentioned in a previous podcast that other people spend far less time thinking about us than we imagine. It's all too easy to fall into a solipsistic illusion and imagine that everything is about you, everything other people say and do. I sink to this negative state frequently, and it is very tiring to live like that. 99% of the time, if you hear someone laughing in the street, it's not about you. They probably haven't even consciously paid you any attention whatsoever. But it's easy to become paranoid if you lack self-confidence or are carrying around some emotional damage, as most of us are to a greater or lesser extent. Most people are equally self-involved, and their behaviour and opinions are usually nothing to do with you. When someone bullies you or is angry with you, it is always about them and their own securities. It is never an accurate judgment of you. So, avoid stressful situations where possible. Cut down on the amount of sensory stimuli you're being exposed to. In fact, where possible, merely closing your eyes can help, because 40% of your brain is geared just towards vision. And if you're just sitting in a brightly lit room, not doing anything in particular, your brain is working on overload just to process all the sensory input through your eyes. So if you just close your eyes, if you're just listening to music, or you're not doing anything particular, or you're just thinking, close your eyes and you are resting 40% of your brain. And the brain takes up 20% of your nutrition and your energy that you require to just keep alive. 20% of that is just keeping your brain functioning on a basic level. So thinking is exhausting, and vision is particularly exhausting. It's almost half of the brain. So resting your eyes is very good advice. You're resting the most overwhelmed of your senses, the most processor intensive, if you like, and even if you don't like. Avoid stressful situations where possible, cut down on the external stimuli, and where that isn't possible, then you have to change your attitude towards those situations. If you can't avoid an angry person, be extra polite to them and make them feel silly for their unwarranted anger. Address any of their criticisms of you in a logical, clear manner. When people are angry, they are out of control. If you maintain control of yourself, then you've won, and you will almost always lessen the situation. Or at least you will lessen the stress for yourself, even if you can't directly combat or prevent that person having that attitude towards you. So that's a few tips on dealing with the external world and stresses and triggers. In the rest of the email, she goes on to ask about being involved in affairs that are forbidden and not acceptable in society. Where does judgment come in, and is it useful in observing oneself? I think Gurdjieff once said, you can have the drink, the women, or the forbidden as long as you continue to do the work afterwards. Is this true, and mostly, is it useful in helping you remember yourself? Is it better to try to shock yourself by doing this work and steer clear of the shocks life can throw at you? So there's obviously quite a lot in there. And if you're, and also I asked her for some clarification on that. I said, what do you mean by forbidden by society? Do you mean homosexuality or just being nonconformist in your behaviour? And she replied and said, yes, all of that as well. So there's quite a lot going on here. If you're not familiar with Gurdjieff, then I'm pretty sure it's episode 15 of the podcast where I talk about him in detail, or he's mentioned in the book, which has the same name, Positive Thinking and the Meaning of Life, the free version of which has now had over 100,000 downloads, smiley face, and the extended version. There's a link to it on the website. It's available in paperback and ebook. And there's quite a bit about Gurdjieff and Ouspensky in there. So there's a lot to unpack there in her question. And again, these are just my personal thoughts, my initial reaction to a message. I would categorize forbidden things into two very distinct categories: things that don't hurt other people and things that do or potentially could hurt other people. Homosexuality was only ever forbidden for pious religious reasons. As far as I'm concerned, whatever consenting adults choose to do with their genitalia is simply nobody else's business. End of story. If you want to take drugs and you don't have to steal to pay for them, and you're not going to drive a car while intoxicated or damage anyone but yourself, then is that okay? Personally, I would still say no, because of all the crime, murder and third world exploitation that is at the root of the drug trade. I think it was the comedian Stuart Lee who said recently that it's impossible to buy ethical cocaine, and I would entirely agree. However, if you want to pick magic mushrooms or grow your own cannabis and you don't harm anyone else, then that seems a fairly benign activity to me. Although, of course, I don't know if picking magic mushrooms is illegal. I've never, apart from alcohol and tobacco, I've never really been into drugs. So I don't actually know if picking magic mushrooms or growing your own cannabis from seeds is actually, I think that is illegal. It's legal to buy seeds, but anyway, that's a bit of a rabbit hole there. But my point is that I think you have to separate the notion of what society forbids and the reality of the situation and who is it harming and how much harm is it causing. You know, homosexuality, you know, has no effect on anyone else, you know, unless you're one of those bizarre people who think that it causes hurricanes and earthquakes and volcanoes. But if you think that, then you are insane and there's no helping you. And the whole notion of what's forbidden and what isn't and why it's forbidden, that's again another rabbit hole. That's maybe for another podcast for another time. But I think my own just personal judgment is, if you're not, whatever you want to do, if you're not hurting anyone else, then that's fine. But as with the example of ethical cocaine, you have to think, I mean, it's impossible to, this is getting sidetracked completely. It's impossible really to do anything. I mean, you could argue it's impossible to live in the 21st century without harming. It's impossible to buy any kind of product that isn't somehow, some way down the chain, exploiting someone in the developing world. But that's not really the question that was asked, so we'll leave that there before we go down an infinite rabbit hole and meet Alice. So in her message, the listener mentioned being involved in, or I think wanting to be involved in, an affair with a married man. And that's what she's talking about by being forbidden, being frowned on by society. Now, I can only give my own opinion and say that those things usually end badly for all concerned. And I don't want to go into details, but I had some kind of nefarious personal experience along those lines of a relationship that would be seen as forbidden. I don't want to go into any more details, but I can definitely say, just from my own point of view, it wasn't worth the hassle and stress of it all. And ultimately, I can now see that I was exploited and lied to. And I have a friend who had a similarly frustrating experience with an affair. So my advice to the listener who sent in the question would be, these situations, regardless of whether you feel any moral qualms about the man's wife and children, if they have any, is that I think it would be a negative and hurtful and ultimately fruitless and counterproductive experience for you as an individual. So even if you have no problem with the rest of it, even if you set aside the question of what anybody else would think or what society thinks or how forbidden or morally repugnant that is to some people, I think it would be a bad thing for you. And I'm not an agony uncle, but that's just my opinion on it. Okay. And she also mentioned, with reference to Gurdjieff, judgment and observing oneself, which is a big thing of Gurdjieff. Do you really want to be the person who is judged by others as a home wrecker or trying to break a marriage, or all the far more unpleasant terms people would doubtless employ if they knew? Moreover, could you look yourself in the mirror and be happy with your judgment of yourself if you engaged in that situation? All I can say is that when I was in a similar situation, I definitely wasn't happy with myself. I felt bad about it. I knew that on some level that I shouldn't be doing what I was doing. And all my friends were very concerned about how I was being used and how it would ultimately work out for me. And they were all entirely correct in their judgment, because it ended very badly. And it was just overall an unpleasant few months of my life. Now, as far as Gurdjieff is concerned, he had what we could call a flexible attitude towards all this. He was adamant about the work. See episode 15 for that. I think it's episode 15, pretty sure. But his whole thing of the work was about maintaining physical and mental discipline at all times. And it was about observing what he would do. He would make people, it wasn't a cult. He would do all this himself. The idea was, he would say to people, right, go and dig the garden for 8 hours. And they would hate it and they would be physically exhausted. But the idea, Gurdjieff's basic idea, I'll briefly recapitulate. And this idea is replicated in some branch of modern psychology that I can't remember, but it's definitely a scientific idea. The idea, Gurdjieff divided us into three elements, called them centers. Said there's the intellectual, the emotional, and the moving, or the physical center. And psychology and biology would kind of divide us up to that. Basically, we have the intellect, we think about things. We have the emotional side of our nature, where we feel things, and we have the physical side, where we move around in the world and our organs function and all that. So those are the three aspects of human existence, of Homo sapiens. And Gurdjieff's basic idea, which just makes massive sense to me from my own experience, and again, this is replicated in psychology, is that most human problems are caused by using the wrong center to do the wrong work. So, for example, you would try to figure out an emotional problem intellectually, and that doesn't work because you're using the wrong tool for the job, if that makes sense. And so Gurdjieff's thing was, he would tell people, go and dig the garden for 8 hours, and they would resent it and hate it and not be getting anything out of it. And he would say, that's because you're taking the wrong approach. You're using your intellectual or your emotional center to do physical work. If you just use your physical set, if you just focus on the physical act of it and you take your intellect and your emotions out of the way, you will work much faster and much quicker, and you will get more done, and you will actually enjoy it. And when people took that approach, they found that they did. So many things he did were very positive, But while it's true that his ideas have benefited many people, myself included, Gurdjieff himself shortened his life considerably by overeating, smoking a lot, and drinking copious amounts of brandy. He thought he could have it all and was ultimately proved wrong, as was Aleister Crowley. And as we're talking about the forbidden, it would be remiss of me not to finish off by briefly mentioning Aleister Crowley, or Crowley if you're posh in English, and I'm Welsh and I'm not posh, so I'll continue to call him Crowley, as indeed did Ozzy Osbourne. Not that that's a marker for correct English pronunciation. Oh dear, made myself laugh there. Aleister Crowley, I called him Crowley then. Crowley is the right one. Other people call him Crowley. Let's call the whole thing off. Potato. Anyway, Crowley sort of modelled himself as the Antichrist. He called himself the Beast 666. He proclaimed to be a Satanist, but basically it was mainly about sex magic, with the emphasis on sex. And he was someone who had this intellectual artifice of meditation and writing books and proclaiming that he was doing something spiritual. He elevated it almost to the status of a religion. But really, what he was doing was having a lot of sex and taking a lot of drugs and severely damaging himself and a lot of other people. I think I'm right in saying that he had a wife and he had some children and he treated them abysmally. He inherited loads of money and he spent most of his life taking heroin and ripping people off. And I think some people had terrible drug or scary satanic spiritual experiences with him. And I think there were some suicides, and I think people went bankrupt because they lent him money that he never paid back. And he just basically wreaked a trail of devastation. But his philosophy, which is what he called it, his one most famous statement is, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law." And he was very much one for doing everything that is forbidden merely because it's forbidden. And all I can say in conclusion is that he wrecked his life. He wrecked a lot of other people's lives. And so if you indulge in what is forbidden, it's generally a fruitless, pointless, sort of anarchic way to live your life. And it doesn't end well for you or anybody around you. However, and in fact, maybe this is something that I'll look at in the next podcast. How do we decide, although this is kind of going outside the kind of remit of positive thinking, the meaning of life, I'll sod it, I'll just do it now. I mean, how we decide what is forbidden and what isn't, I mean, in some way it's a personal choice. On the other hand, all countries have a legal system, and then all societies have some kind of moral code. I mean, there are some societies where virtually all societies now have a very strong moral code against incest and paedophilia. There are a few countries in the world where those things are accepted, even encouraged, and are seen as normal. Now, from my point of view, and hopefully from the point of view of everyone listening, I find those things absolutely appalling. But what empirical scientific method can we employ to say these practices are right or wrong? I mean, no, paedophilia and incest are extreme examples, but you know, obviously, there are countries in the Middle East where if you have an affair, you'll be stoned to death, or the woman will be stoned to death. The man will probably be forgiven because it was obviously her fault, because women are evil or whatever, you know. Or, you know, I was going to say something about Oh God, I was going to say something about veils and burkas then, but I think, no, that's probably a really, really bad idea. Anyway, I'm starting to ramble now. We're getting off a bit track. Time to wrap up the episode. So, listener, you know who you are. I hope that has answered some of your questions. If it hasn't, then please contact me again and I'll do another episode next week. And everyone else listening, please keep listening. As I would love to do this every week. So please contact me, give me some encouragement, buy some of my books or albums, chuck me a couple of dollars on PayPal. There's donation buttons on the podcast, and spread the word on social media. And but mainly send me some questions. You know, I only need a couple of questions a week, and I'll happily do this every week. I would like to do this every week for a few years and build it up into something much bigger than it is now, because I think these matters of mental health and social issues and psychology and philosophy, I think these things are important. I was going to say they're not talked about enough. They're talked about a lot, but I think they're often talked about in the wrong way or in an unhelpful way. So anyway, I mean, I've basically said all I want to say about my own life experience, and positive thinking and the meaning of life is a very broad thing. So what I just want to do this podcast every week. It can be whatever you want it to be, obviously kind of within the very broad remit of positive thinking and the meaning of life, which is any kind of aspect of psychology, philosophy, mental health, religion, you know, whatever. It's a very broad, I was going to say church. It's not a church, although I will be applying for tax exempt status. Anyway, thanks for listening. I hope when this is edited, it makes sense. Hopefully the comment box will be up in the next couple of days. Please send me some suggestions, questions, topics, anything. Just give me stuff to talk about and I'll talk about it. Hope to see you again soon. Nighty night. Thank you.